family cookout, behind Maximov's back. Basically, they said, "Promise us you won't let Mafi get hurt again," his brother added, "or die." "He's not going to die," I said, assured of this. I still am. "Then hurt," they all said in unison.
"Promise us,"
Audrey Cobalt, the youngest Cobalt of seven, emphasized, a knife in her hand for a whole blood oath thing that I declined. 18 times, I said, "I promise," until they believed me. And I've never carried a promise like a burden, but here, now, remembering the pure, unconditional love those kids have for Maximov, I feel the fucking need to at least caution him. I run my hand down to his smooth jaw. "You need to be more careful." "I'm the same as I've always been." His eyes dance over my mouth and cheeks. Maximov has one arm out of the pool, and he uses his weight to cage me, keeping our shoulders above water. "So this is my bodyguard talking, or my..." He pauses. "Wow." My brows rise, a smile edging across my mouth. "You can't even say what we are." "Are we?" His chest rises in a bigger breath. Either he doesn't want to say the word first, or he's not sure if it's the normal time for labels. I tilt my head. "Your virginity is showing. Pretty sure I lost my virginity a long time ago. Relationship virginity." In the water, his hand dips down my swim shorts, rubbing my bare ass. I bite down, my pulse hammering. I tuck him closer to my chest, even if he's the one anchoring me to the corner. "How long is a long time ago?" I ask him. It's not public knowledge, and he hasn't really told me yet. Maximov stares at my lips for a long moment. I splash water at his face. He lets go of the edge just to wipe the water. "Thank you for that. Stop imagining your cock inside my mouth." He feigns confusion. "How'd you know?" "Wild guess." His voice lowers to a deep whisper. "When did you have your first sexual experience with someone?" He needs me to answer first. I don't mind. 13. I was young and I mistook you have a great ass for love. Some people are into casual hookups or NSA sex, but that's not my favorite thing. I prefer getting to know the person before or during or after for a while. And I can't stand open relationships. While you fuck me, you only fuck me. His lips lift, but then they fall in deep contemplation, mulling over my words. I was young, and I mistook you have a great ass for love. And then he asks, "How do you know that's not happening now?" My brows jump. "That's assuming I'm in love with you." I cut myself off, reading his stiff, rigid body language clearly. His features start padlocking, shutting me out. "No, no, hey, I'm fucking with you, Maximov. I'm an asshole." I clutch his impassive face. My stomach twists. It's extremely hard for him to be vulnerable. I know this. I shouldn't have made that joke. "It's fine," he says, his voice void of emotion. "I get it." "No, you don't." And I tell him bluntly, assuredly, without a fucking doubt, "You're my boyfriend. And from the jumpstart, this has always been more than just sex. Yeah, we wanted to fuck each other's brains out. But for Maximov to take this risk, it had to be more than what he could get at a nightclub." His shoulders try to loosen, and he starts to smile, water dripping off our wet hair. "Boyfriends. Are you sure that's what we are?" 100%. I pause. "Are you?" He nods strongly. "Yeah." I just fucking kiss him. He deepens the embrace, his hand rising from my ass to the back of my head. When our lips break, he finally tells me, 17. That's when I had sex for the first time." It makes sense. I'm about to speak, but his phone rings by the diving board. A call. Maximov immediately swims over to the other side, and I pull myself out of the water. He's already sitting on the edge, phone in hand, when I reach him. "It's Luna." Concern hardens his face. It's 1 a.m. on a school night. Late for Luna to call. He clicks the speakerphone button. "Hey, what's going on?" She sniffles, and as soon as Maximov has a mere hint of Luna crying, he stands up with a "we need to leave" face. I grab our towels, dry clothes, my holstered gun, radio, all set. Water drips off us, creating puddles at our feet, but he won't want to waste time changing. By the time Luna speaks, we're in the elevator descending to the parking deck.
"I just got my last test scores back before finals."
Her voice cracks.
"Mafi, I failed 3 of my classes."
She starts crying.
"Elliot and Tom did the calculations and I'd have to make 193 on my finals to even pass."
Shit. I hook my radio to my damp swim shorts and fit the earpiece in my ear. Maximoff grips the cell hard in his hand and pushes the elevator P3 button repeatedly.
What the hell happened, Luna? I thought you were doing better.
Hi, Luna. I greet and catch his hand so he'll stop punching the fucking button. And I keep his hand on mine for a long beat.
Pharaoh, did you hear?
Yeah, hang in there.
I'm trying.
Her voice shakes.
But it's my fault. I missed too many quizzes. I skipped the classes where I'd have to see Jeffra.
What did she do? Maximoff almost growls.
She made a rumor in August that I'm so weird I eat shit for fun. I didn't care. She could have called me anything and I wouldn't have cared.
Luna takes a short pause.
But someone put real shit in a paper bag in my locker and I just couldn't even look at her. It made me sick.
My jaw muscle ticks. Maximoff's eyes flash murderously. If he speaks, he may say something like, I'm going to kill someone. I squeeze his hand. It's not your fault, I tell her.
I let her make me feel worse, Luna says. It's my fault.
No, Maximoff growls. It's not. Where was your bodyguard? I ask. Epsilon didn't share this information with the whole team, or else I would have known.
He never saw. I just acted like it was my lunch and then threw it away. I didn't want him to worry Mom and Dad.
Her words quiver.
Now I wish I had, because then maybe I would have had the courage to face her in class. And I know I can repeat the school year or do homeschool like Xander, but I just wanted the cap and gown graduation for them. I saw how they looked at you, Moffy, when you graduated, and I wanted to give that to Mom and Dad. I wanted them to be proud of me, and I fucked it up.
Maximoff glares at the phone. Luna, listen to me. I love you. I'm coming over. We'll figure out how to tell Mom and Dad then. The elevator dings. We've reached P3.
27. Maximoff Hale. We returned to my townhouse at almost 4 a.m. Pharaoh and I stayed with my sister for about 3 hours. He would have waited at the security's house one street over, but he's closest to Luna. I was glad she wanted him there. Luna ended up feeling comfortable enough to tell our mom and dad. Tears were shed, hugs were given. In the end, they made a plan to speak to the principal. She may not have to repeat the whole year if they learn about the shit in a bag. I thought I was pissed, but my dad almost woke up Jeffra's parents at 3 a.m., not by phone. That family lives in our gated neighborhood. My mom spider-monkeyed his back to stop him, and he turned to complete affectionate mush in her presence. I checked my watch when I shut my bedroom door. 4:23 a.m. I'm sorry, I tell Pharaoh. I turn off my harsh lamp and the strung bulbs on the rafters cast shadows in a soft orange glow in my small bedroom. Pharaoh unlaces his boots and tugs them off. That's the fifth time you've needlessly apologized tonight. I pull my crew neck over my head and toss the shirt in my wicker hamper. Every damn time we're alone or in a conversation, actually when we're doing anything at all, something in my life swoops in and cuts it off. Your pockets are overflowing with rain checks. I watch him walk to my sole window, gray curtains drawn shut. I'm shit at this, Pharaoh. You should reconsider this whole thing. He's so damn calm as he leans against the window ledge, half sitting on it. This whole thing. Yeah, this whole thing. I motion from him to me, then me to him. I can fuck. Christ, I'm good at sex. Who told you that? His lips quirk. I don't miss a beat. But being someone's boyfriend is so far out of my territory. It's on another galaxy. My life can't accommodate romantic relationships. At least not the kind you deserve. Is that really what you think? He frowns darkly. Yeah. I nod several times. You've had 4 other boyfriends, Pharaoh, and I can say I'm probably without a fucking doubt your worst. In terms of fucking, I'm number 1, though. Sure. Sure, he adds, eyeing me, still not giving anything away. Maybe he's processing everything I dumped on him. He shakes his head once. How long have you been agonizing over this? What? Come on, he says, still calm, still cool. He crosses his arms over his chest more leisurely than serious. You're you. You fixate over the details, over every variable you can think of. You've most likely been wrestling with this for weeks, if not months. He knows me well. Millions of people know me. but not like this, not like that. I hang on to that fact like rope on a wall that blocks my view of everything. He's how I see the other side. He's made my life feel freer. He made me believe I could actually have a relationship. He made me believe I could experience more than just this fleeting, temporary thing. And I have. Christ, I have. But what is this for him? I give him halfway, half of a relationship, a semblance of the real thing. It's been on my mind, I admit. You've experienced what it's like being with me, the constant interruptions that I won't ignore, the lack of privacy that won't change, the never-ending phone calls, the zero PDA. If you want to break things off now, I get it. Just clean cut. You can go back to being just my bodyguard. I go back to being just your client. My chest is on fire. Is that what you want? He says. Those words like a sling blade. No. My eyes sear. No. I want you. More than I've ever wanted anyone. Pharaoh never breaks my gaze. And you're assuming that the lack of privacy, the zero PDA, and all the interruptions bother me. He shakes his head. They don't. Would I like to touch you in the car, or on the street, or even in an elevator? Of course. But I get more by being with you than any PDA could give me. I don't understand. Maximov, he says, the reason why this relationship works is because I'm your bodyguard. I'm with you almost 24 hours a day, every single day. 1 week with you is the equivalent to 3 months with anyone else. You know more about me and what it's like to be with me than some of my long-term exes. He laughs at a thought. The fact that we're sleeping together, around one another all the time, and not killing each other is a miracle. And it says something. His words extinguish the toxic heat in my chest. What? We're good together. Really good. Pharaoh smiles, and you're not a bad boyfriend. You're not the worst, or even second to last place. You're the most thoughtful, the most caring, and the media was right when they said whoever dates you would be the luckiest fucking human alive. I feel lucky to be with you. I inhale, but I don't exhale yet. I can't give you more, though. I know there may be a point where a crisis in my family may conflict with whatever's happening in your life, and you're not going to like who I choose. You're going to choose your family because that's who you are, Pharaoh says strongly, and I will love you for it. I set my hands on the back of my neck. He's not considering all the variables, or am I just packing sandbags around my house before it explodes? That's not a relationship, I combat. I should pick my boyfriend. If you keep weighing your morality with scales, you're going to lose. Pharaoh still sits at ease. Just put down the hypotheticals and step away. Let go. I don't know how. I want to give him as much as he's given me. Pharaoh licks his bottom lip. Can we agree on one thing? He asks. We're together. We're doing this. And neither of us wants to stop. Yeah. He pushes off from the window and crosses the room. Quickly, he's in front of me, his hands on the waistband of my jeans. I hold his muscular shoulders, skin warm beneath my hands. One day, he tells me, his voice gravel and silk, his mouth on the base of my neck, sucking and biting up to my ear. My muscles slacken, unwinding. I edge even closer. His hot breath throbs my cock. I'm going to be inside of you. One day. I still like fantasizing about the idea. It's a vulnerable place I eventually want to reach with him. Just not tonight. I wake to the worst beeping 5:40 a.m. alarm. Too damn early. Pharaoh's head is on my shoulder, our muscular legs tangled. I reach over and slap the snooze on his phone. It wouldn't be the first time he stayed longer in my bed. We've both been lenient on this one precaution. Later, he'll return to his townhouse, hopefully without Quinn noticing anything strange. Pharaoh yawns in his fist and sits up on his elbows. His white hair is a mess, his lips redden from rough kissing barely an hour ago, and the beginnings of a know-it-all smile work their way across his mouth. It's undeniable. Pharaoh Keene is unadulterated sex in the morning. I have more than a small hard-on for him. Like, currently, right now, I crave him, blood rushing to my dick. He stares at me like I'm a regular fixture to these 5:40 a.m. wake-up calls. Like, no matter how tired, I'm the first face he wants to see. Fuck me. My cock aches beneath my sheets and orange comforter. Without saying a word, Pharaoh stretches to the nightstand and grabs a condom and lube. He passes the bottle to me but keeps the condom. He tears the wrapper, and I kick down the comforter and sheets. I watch the movement of his fingers as he covers my erection. His grip is light. Closer. More. His mouth curves upwards, and he lies back on his elbows. I lather myself while I eye the inked skull pirate on his ribcage, and the lavender sparrow nearby. I lift my gaze to his barbell nipple piercing. Fuck. My waist arches slightly. I turn towards Pharaoh, and I pull him up higher, aligning us. He drops off his elbows when I position him on his side. Not fucking gentle. He lets out a rough, throaty noise and palms his cock twice. His round ass brushes up against me. My mouth touches the back of his neck. I grip his thigh, stretching his leg over my waist to spread him more. Erection grazing his hole. His nose flares in desire. This is the only way you're getting me to be the little spoon, he reminds me. You better fucking enjoy it. He turns his head back to me. Enough that I kiss him, my tongue parting his lips and sliding against his. He reaches up and holds my jaw. Fuck me. I ache to rock forward right now. I break the kiss early and breathe. Trust me. I already am. We never spoon each other at night. Neither one of us can give up that lead. Most nights, while we sleep, our arms and legs end up tangling. I clutch my shaft and slowly push inside of Pharaoh. He buries his head into his pillow, mouth opened. A garbled noise escapes. I watch him for a second, my ass flexing. Yes. Fuck yes. He's pretty fucking tight for my cock. Every time I sink into him, it's top-notch, eye-rolling pressure. My movement is unhurried, achingly temperate, trying to milk every damn second for its total worth. Fuck, Maximov, he almost gasps, his breath shallow. I groan, all the way in. Yes, yes. I rock deeper into him, my arm hooked around his abs. I wrap my hand around his fucking huge erection, and I sink my thrusts with my hand. Pharaoh grits down for 1 second before his mouth is forced open by the pleasure again. He curses into the pillow, face reddened, holding breath, neck muscles taut. Fuck. Holy fuck. I thrust harder, ass flexed more, banging up against him. My chest is welded to his strong, tattooed back. Pharaoh reaches behind him and grips my ass, pushing me firmer into him. Yes, 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 fuck, yes. He rocks backwards into my cock when I rock forward into him. We move together in unison, like a slow, thundering wave. He moans a deep, raspy moan, like the sound was unearthed from his core. Fuck, he moans again. Fuck, fuck. Pharaoh, I groan, sweat built. I'm rising towards an intense peak. I quicken my pace in a final sprint. Fuck, yes, 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 fuck. My orgasm ripples through me and his covers my palm. I eke the climax, staying inside of him, slowing in and out. In and out, my hot breath on his neck. Pharaoh is trying to catch his breath in the pillow. Then he turns his head, watching me ease out of him completely. Then I kiss him. Sex with Pharaoh is incomparable and immeasurable. I'm pretty much a goner. Totally and utterly obsessed with the before, during, and after. It's ridiculous. In the best damn way. I sit up, discard the condom, and grab a towel from my nightstand drawer, tossing it to him. Pharaoh leans up against the headboard. Are you ever worried about becoming a sex addict? He catches me off guard, and he waits for me to process. I blink a couple times. I'm sitting on the edge of the bed, my feet cold on the hard wood. I glance back at him. No. It's a flat, definitive word.
No?
Pharaoh seems surprised.
For how much you avoid drinking, I just thought.
I'm careful. I say, standing. I don't let sex interfere with my daily life, ever. I'm highly aware of the warning signs of unhealthy behavior. Highly aware. I can have a lot of sex and not be a sex addict. The minute sex ruins my relationships or my job, then it's a goddamn problem. As far as I'm concerned, I don't have one.
Fair enough,
Pharaoh says, bawling the towel. He drops the topic too fast. I rotate to face him. Do you think I have a problem? As my mom's bodyguard for 3 years, he was near a sex addict a lot longer than most people.
No, Pharaoh says. No, I don't. But being around you all the time, you do have addictive tendencies.
I don't ask for specifics. I know.
Good, he says into a nod.
28. Pharaoh Keen. At Superheroes and Scones, Jane places multiple boxes of pastries on a low table. Bright and neon beanbags are strewn around the loft lounge, and an Avengers movie plays on mounted television screens. The place is dead at 5 a.m., and I sip my coffee and take a seat adjacent to Maximoff on a blue beanbag. I'm almost shoulder to shoulder with Quinn. Not my first choice, but a few days ago, Quinn said to me, "I keep missing you in the mornings. Your bed is empty, too." It didn't shake me, but I wouldn't concoct a wild, intricate lie that could unravel. I just told him, occasionally I'll crash on the couch or in one of the cars, it's colder. He knows how hot my attic room can get. Be more careful around Quinn, I agreed to Maximoff's new rule. I may have physically distanced us this morning, but I'm still consciously staring at my boyfriend. I smile into my coffee when he pretends to be more interested in an Avengers film on mute. He holds a paper cup of hot tea, drinking slowly, trying not to look at me. We all know he ranks me above Iron Man, Thor, and whatever other Avenger makes an on-screen appearance, not just because I'm clearly better and clearly not fictional, but because I'm his bodyguard, his real-life superhero. Jane opens two pink boxes.
For the meeting, we have croissants, muffins, stuffed donuts, frosted donuts, Danishes, scones, bagels, a few waffles, but do not, under any circumstances, eat these.
She lifts up a heart-shaped tin.
I spent 2 hours helping my one and only sister with math homework yesterday, and afterwards, she gave me strict orders to deliver these to Oscar Oliveira. I will complete the task.
I lean forward and grab the tin out of her hands.
Pharaoh!
Breathe. I'm not eating Oscar's cookies. I pop the tin and inspect the perfectly heart-shaped sugar cookies, pink icing, and written with Oscar and I love you. Maximoff grimaces at Jane. Can your 12-year-old sister pick someone who's not 30 years old to crush on? What about someone 5 years older? I try really hard not to tease or irritate him.
You can sheathe your swords, Moffy. It's harmless,
Jane says, and eagle-eyes me as I pass the tin to Quinn. He snatches a cookie. Jane glares and then yanks the entire tin out of his hands.
Quinn!
I laugh. I like Quinn more and more every day. Not hesitating, he bites into the cookie. Oscar's my brother. I should get one cookie out of that. Hey, I'll be his best man or whatever at their pretend wedding. Audrey disinvited me to that wedding 3 years ago after I told her she has bad taste in men. Jane lowers on her beanbag and protectively clutches the tin to her lap. I've noticed the bag of peas she's been carrying around all morning and sitting on, and my intrigue is spilling into concern. I have to ask now. Did I miss Nate coming over last night? I motion with my coffee to the peas that she's using as an ice pack. Jane looks genuinely surprised that I'm asking. She searches my gaze with intense curiosity, wondering why. Why did I ask? Because you mean something to Maximoff, and you're starting to mean something to me. Maximoff's cheekbones sharpen, but he keeps his attention on the TV, not worried. I assume she must have told him the news this morning in the bathroom. Quinn frowns at Jane. Did Nate sneak in? You didn't tell me he was coming over.
He didn't,
she says quickly. A new guy? Quinn asks. Then I should have been there with an NDA.
Not unless you'd like to try to give my sex toys an NDA.
Jane smiles as realization parts Quinn's lips. Oh. I arch my brows at Jane. Not enough lube there?
No.
She sits straighter. It's her I'm preparing a speech posture.
Sex is almost a family legacy. My parents were in porn.
Maximoff corrects. Not willingly. Their tapes were leaked.
Still,
she says,
I thought perhaps my real passion is in sex toys. I could have been a fabulous sex toy reviewer.
I rest my arm on my bent knee. And what happened?
I inserted something in terribly wrong.
We all make a pained face. Jane takes a deep, reassuring breath before declaring,
I've realized it's not for me.
Seriously, I say, I know what'll make you feel better.
What?
She wonders, a gleam in her eye. One of Oliveira's cookies. Quinn laughs, and Maximoff stares between Jane and me like we're seconds from destroying a relationship we haven't really even built. Jane tips her head to me like touche. A car to Pharaoh and Quinn, the Omega Lead's voice bleeds through my mic. Sol and I are leaving now, we'll be there soon. A motorcycle revs in the background. I stand and inspect the pastries. Sully and Akara are on their way, I tell Maximoff. What do you want to eat? His eyes narrow like you shouldn't speak to me in front of Quinn. I cock my head, smiling. Come on. It'd draw more attention if we were playing a silent game with one another. I trust myself to rein in the casual flirting. I'm sure he trusts himself, too. He just likes to add 5 padlocked chains onto a dead-bolted door. He stands, posture stringent. I can get my own food. It's a common phrase for him. I can do that myself, you don't need to open my car door, etc., etc. It's more endearing than he understands. I grab an egg and cheese croissant and watch him grab a blackberry scone. We sit back down at nearly the exact same time. His attention wants to be on me so badly. He stares at my hair for a long, long beat like it's brand new. My hair's been blue for 2 weeks, I remind him, the electric blue strands pushed back out of my face. I wanted to change. I only have 1 barbell in my eyebrow now. Plus, I put in my small hoop earring. I got that, thanks, he says, licking his lips and sipping his hot tea. I laugh into a smile. Quinn spreads cream cheese on his bagel with a plastic knife. Can someone explain why there's a production meeting for We Are Calloway if filming doesn't start until next January? He licks his thumb. That's why we're all here. A production meeting. We Are Calloway has been an Emmy-nominated and award-winning docuseries for over a decade. It's the only platform that enables the Hales, Meadows, and Cobalts to voice their opinions and tell their stories. It's to ensure their truth is heard and not twisted on social media. When We Are Calloway first premiered, I was a kid, and I remember sneaking downstairs and hiding behind my father's sofa while he watched the R-rated show, for mature themes. I peeked around the armrest and saw Lily Calloway. A 20-something scrawny girl that I'd one day protect. And she looked powerfully in the camera and said,
I'm always going to be a sex addict, but I'm more than just sex.
Every raw frame of the show struck a chord with me, and by the end, my father sat in silence and uttered one odd word. Wow. After all these years, the family still films season after season, to humanize themselves, but also for the hundreds of people that relate to them. Recently, the docuseries has been on a short hiatus, but it starts again next year. I only have one issue with the show. It makes security harder. Maximoff breaks his scone in half. We have early production meetings because we need to talk to Jack before we do anything. Quinn nearly chokes on his coffee. Jack? Like the Jack? I say, the one and only Jack Hyland. Take note, remember whose side you're on. One too many have fallen for his charm. Maximoff gives me a tough look. There are no sides. There are definitely sides, Wolf Scout. I motion to Quinn and myself. We're in charge of protecting your private lives, and then Jack is in charge of protecting your public lives. Still, we have to align at the end of the day and find common ground together. And almost everyone likes Jack Hyland. He's hard to hate. That used to make me a little bit wary of him. But I have no real beef with Jack. He's the youngest executive producer on We Are Calloway. And he has an enormous amount of contact with security. He has to. Production and security are intertwined on filming days. These meetings set up most of the prep work. Someone knocks on the locked entrance downstairs. I stand and peer over the balcony railing. Speaking of Jack. Go meet him first, Quinn. He bites into his bagel and then jogs down the twisting iron stairs. Maximoff has pushed aside his food and tea. He somehow sits like a board on a slouchy red beanbag, and he cracks his knuckles. Jane shifts her bag of peas, but I see how uptight she sits too. What's wrong? I ask them. Staying standing, I lean on the silver wall with a lightning bolt decal. It's Sully's first production meeting, Maximoff tells me.
It needs to go well,
Jane adds. Right. Their cousin has never been on We Are Calloway. By joining the docuseries, Sully is opening herself up to new criticism from the public. But Maximoff and Jane have been on the show since they were little kids. Before I even met him, I watched Maximoff hail on screen profess his undying love for Power Rangers and excitedly say,
I hope that if I have a brother or a sister, they'll like Power Rangers too.
Public fact, Xander is a Power Ranger every year for Halloween. Jane abandons her frozen peas to flip open another pastry box.
What do you want, Jack?
Jack Hyland ascends the twisting staircase. He has a quintessential jock look, broad cut muscles visible through his tight black button-down, shoulder span as wide as a linebacker, and the charisma and popularity of a letter jacket quarterback. In any teen comedy, my type should hate his type, but real people are more than just rebel versus jock. Plus, we're both adults. What I know about Jack, he wasn't a football player. He did swim in college. He's 25, Filipino-American, biracial, and he has short, dark brown hair, honey brown eyes, and he's a good inch taller than me. Give me the blueberry muffin, he tells Jane, and she passes the baked good before gently sitting back down. Quinn slumps onto his beanbag. Unwrapping his muffin, Jack turns to me first. Have you reconsidered my offer? Maximoff brows knit. What offer? I cross my arms loosely. Jack wants me on the show, so fucking badly, I emphasize those words. How long have you been asking me? 3 years. He bites into the blueberry muffin. The more you keep turning me down, I'm going to start believing it's personal. Wait, Maximoff stands. He hates sitting when other people are standing, I swear. You want Pharaoh, this Pharaoh? He points at me. On the show? I give Maximoff a once-over. How many Pharaohs do you know? Maximoff shoots me a middle finger. Jack is used to exchanges like these, not fazed. I've always wanted to showcase a bodyguard on We Are Calloway. Pharaoh has a good look. There's a gif of you two. Using one hand, he scrolls on his phone and flashes me the gif first. We've seen that one. A Tumblr user made a gif from the footage when the court suspended Moffy's license. In the gif, Maximoff and I push through the courthouse doors, exiting with sunglasses side by side, cameras flashing repeatedly. We look hot together. And Pharaoh is good-looking enough to be a model, Jack tells my boyfriend. I raise my brows in a self-satisfied wave at Maximoff. He tries not to stare at me again. He almost has fuck-me eyes. By the way, Jack is straight, and I'd agree. I'm a 10 out of 10, but coming from Jack. That loses its meaning when I've heard you use the same compliment for 42 different people, I say, being precise on the number because I have a great memory. So I can be precise and accurate. See, Jack has a way of making people feel good. It's his job to ensure everyone in the room is comfortable. Then they can share information with him. Even now, his eyes soften on me. You're a gorgeous guy. Better? We're getting slightly more original, but not by much, I say, and return to my beanbag beside Quinn. In a matter of seconds, we're all seated around the low table again. Maximoff refills his tea and says to Jack, It still doesn't make sense. If you put Pharaoh in the show, he'd become famous. He wouldn't be able to be my bodyguard. Exactly. I pick up my croissant sandwich. Jack wants me in the show acting like a bodyguard. What he hasn't grasped yet is that I like my job as a real bodyguard. Maximoff makes a concentrated effort not to look at me and draw attention, but he knows the fuller truth. I love my job because I'm around him. Jack opens his notepad, slouched coolly on a yellow beanbag. All I'm saying is one day you may want to change. He flips a page. Before Sullivan arrives, we can start with the two of you. Pen between his fingers, he motions to Maximoff and Jane. Next season is about big topics. Is there anything specific you want to talk about?
29. Maximoff Hale. Is there anything specific you want to talk about? Jack always pitches this question first. My mind reels through various issues I could possibly discuss. Everything circumnavigates to one. One topic, one plight, one goddamn annoyance. Yeah, I set my cup on the table. I want to talk about my uncle. The superheroes in Scone's loft deadens. My eyes flip to a war scene playing in Avengers, the Hulk smashing buildings to smithereens. Jack skirts over the silence like it never existed.
Which uncle?
Reich? Yesterday an article compared his F-bombs to mine. I don't even say fuck as often as him. Sully does way more than me. I didn't plan to come in this hot and aggravated. I sense Pharaoh and his at-ease nature, and you know the weirdest thing? It calms me. Makes me feel like I have someone prepared to jump on my side. Right now, this moment, any moment, he's with me. My bound shoulders unwind. Jack isn't the type of person to just say no. He tries to hear people out, but he reminds me.
You talked about this last season, Mafi.
It's been worse this year.
But it's not going to change with this show, Jack says. You've discussed the topic at length 3 times. We've reached the max. 1 more time and the public will believe you're overcompensating for something. As a producer, I'd tell you to just go ahead and talk about it. It'll bring us ratings. But as your friend, I'm telling you not to bring it up.
God damn it. What about if I talk about my dad?
It depends.
Jack twists off a cap to Ziff, a sports drink.
If you're going to just tell the audience how great of a father he is.
No. I rub my aching shoulder. I need to stretch. Just tell me what I should be talking about then.
Sex, Jack says. It's what people want to know most about you, especially with those photos.
The bite marks.
Who are you seeing? What kind of pressures do you deal with being the son of a sex addict? Are you more careful? Do you have insecurities?
He lists the questions rapidly. I've heard them all before.
Jack broaches the topic of sex almost every production meeting. Are you ready to talk about this stuff? He asks.
No, I say firmly. Not this season. Maybe not ever. I'm sorry.
This is a no-apology zone, remember? Whatever content you want to share, good. Whatever you don't, that's good too. It's all up to you.
Jack already jumps to a new topic.
What about your relationship with Luna? She'll be 18 and be on her own for the first time. It'd be a great arc.
Out of my siblings, Luna is the only one who's on We Are Calloway with me. We've bonded a bit while filming together, and I already know she'd love a whole arc about our relationship.
So, I agree. Jane? Jack asks. Any personal topics?
Jane and I already scooted closer to one another. I stare down at my best friend who wears a cheetah print sweater, pale yellow pants, and sequined high heels. Whatever she's about to say, she hasn't brought up with me yet.
I'd like to discuss my weight, she says assuredly.
Our bodyguards have no idea how to react to these issues if it doesn't involve security. Even Pharaoh, I think. They just keep eating and drinking, doing their best not to appear concerned. It's not their job to be emotionally invested in us. But a lot of them care, I fucking realized. Obviously. One is my boyfriend. Don't look at him. I'm trying. Christ, I've been trying for the past 15 minutes.
More specifically?
Jack asks my best friend while jotting notes. He bites into his muffin. I wrap my arm around Janie when she says,
That I love my body the way it is. I have tiny boobs, no ass, love handles, and a bigger belly. How chubby isn't a nasty word, and their hatred won't change me.
Pharaoh and Quinn start clapping in genuine appreciation.
Can we do takebacks?
Our bodyguards actually do know how to react. They're our friends.
I know, I know.
I squeeze Jane around the shoulders and kiss her freckled cheek.
Chatem, mon moitié. I love you, my other half. Janie smiles warmly.
Chatem aussi.
I love you too.
Jack scribbles and nods.
That'll be great. Also, you're looking lovely as ever, Jane.
Merci.
Pharaoh rolls his eyes, not at Janie's comment, but the producer's.
What?
Jack asks him.
I can't give compliments to this group anymore?
You're almost maxed out, Pharaoh says.
Then you're all ugly,
Jack says with a wide grin.
How's that?
Quinn starts a slow clap for Jack and Pharaoh, Jane and I join in. The exec producer's smile expands. The bell to the front door dings open. Akara has a key. Janie and I straighten up and exchange a look that says, Protect Sully if it gets intense. The actual process of the docuseries is pretty fucking raw. Round one of the gauntlet of oversharing. Dump your personal story onto Jack and a horde of bodyguards. Round 2, allow production teams to invade your life for specific chunks of time. Round 3, let the world watch you be vulnerable. Right now, I'm just fixated on round 1 for Sol. She'll want to complete what she starts. No matter what, but if round 1 makes her uncomfortable, I'll pull the fucking plug and call it off. Jack, I whisper as footsteps sound on the iron staircase. Since this is Sully's first meeting, can you just ease her in? Sure, Jack nods, and he stands to greet my cousin. The rest of us turn and watch. Here's Sol. Akara takes her motorcycle helmet, already holding his.
Thanks, kids.
Sully unbuttons her denim jacket, dressed in denim jeans and a plain white tee. Her dark hair falls long on her chest. Jack approaches and catches her gaze.
You must be Jack.
Sully holds out her hand. Akara sidesteps around them, and I spot this long, warning look that he shoots Jack. It pretty much says, careful with this one, or you're dead. Jack falters for a brief second. He frowns and then brushes off the moment, shaking Sully's hand.
I'm Jack.
Jack Hyland,
Sully adds, their handshake lasting a long beat. Janie nudges my shoulder and her brows wag as she picks apart a croissant. I don't know what the fuck that means. All I know is that Jack is acting weird. I can't discern whether it's because I warned him about Sully, Akara shot him a look, or we've all been joking about his compliments. Akara takes a seat on a beanbag between Pharaoh and Quinn. Security claiming their side of the low table. All right, there are sides. They all observe Sully and Jack more intensely than they do most casual encounters.
And you're Sullivan Meadows.
Jack finally breaks from the handshake.
You can call me Sully.
Then her gaze flits to Jane. Jane waves her over and makes room for her to sit in between us. I grab a teal beanbag and set it down in the free space. When Jack and Sully join us at the table, he sits on his own side and picks up his notepad. Now there are 3 metaphorical and literal sides. The famous, the security, the production. I get it. And I watch Jack watching Sully. My cousin squishes between me and Jane, and she edges up to the table, making a plate of food. Jack twirls his pen.
Do you want to be introduced in the show as Sully?
Sully piles 2 waffles on a plate.
Yeah. That'd be good, right?
She looks to me, then Jane.
Fuck, I don't know. What do you two go by? Jane?
Maximoff. She glances at Jack.
I'll go with Sullivan.
He nods. Sully towers 3 chocolate donuts on top of the waffles. She finds the whipped cream canister and strawberry syrup that Janie brought and squirts the waffle donut mound. Jack can't stop staring at her breakfast, his pen frozen on the notepad.
Would you want to talk about that?
About what?
She looks up, confused.
My donuts? I haven't eaten them yet. How am I supposed to talk about them?
Pharaoh tilts his head at Sully.
Green, the shade of newbies. It's a cute color on you.
She blushes and glances to Akara. He already throws a pillow at Pharaoh's chest, who rolls his eyes. I can't take in the joke or even add in a sarcastic remark. I just stay on guard for whatever's coming.
On the show, Jack says, ignoring my bodyguard. Boyfriend.
Focus.
I blink a few times.
He clarifies further.
Do you want to talk about your eating habits?
Oh, fuck, really?
She frowns deeply.
People would want to know about that?
Press has photographed my cousin at restaurants. She only orders desserts. It's not like that's her breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but she's not following any nutritional food pyramid either. I only ever saw her eat healthy during intense training periods. She'd plug her nose and chug protein shakes.
First, foremost, Jack says to Sully, the show is about what you want to do. The public would love to know everything about you, so don't feel pressured to speak about a topic that makes you uncomfortable.
Sully nods heartily, cutting into her waffle donuts.
I like it.
Jane flashes me a thumbs up. I'm not ready to rest easy. I tell Sully, Jack has a good perception of how the public will react to what you want to share.
Whoa, really?
Sully starts smiling. It's not often we find people who can ground our lives and trust.
So, what would the public think about my breakfast?
Security hawkeyes Jack.
They'll label you a picky eater to start, Jack says, and some will find it endearing. Other people will shit on you for it. That's a huge part of the show. You share your story and then you take the good with the bad. Jane chimes in.
It's nice being able to have your voice out there.
Sully stuffs her mouth and chews slowly, contemplating. Are you positive you want to do this? I ask. No one's forcing you on We Are Calloway. You can back out now, Sully. Jack studies her closely.
He's right. We'd love to have you on, but this is your choice.
No, I need this.
Sully nods to herself now.
Look, I need to talk about some of this bullshit. I'm just wrapping my head around how this works.
That's okay, Jack says, comforting. I'll guide you through the process.
Sully takes a bigger breath and looks to Akara. He combs his black hair back and fits on a backwards baseball cap. She asks him,
You'll be there while we film, even if it's not a public place?
If you want me there, he says. I'll be there, Sol.
Okay, good.
Jack edges closer to the table, to her.
Hopefully, he says, drawing Sully's gaze, you and me will reach a place of trust where you won't need Akara in the room.
The air snaps on the security side of things. Jane rocks back with me, our furrowed brows on the three bodyguards. Akara is boiling, venom in his glare, muscles supremely flexed. Sitting completely still, that's somehow more intimidating, and no one intimidates me. But you know that. You don't know that Pharaoh has his fist to his mouth, jaw tensed, or that Quinn crosses his arms at Jack. They're not happy that he just metaphorically banished a bodyguard from a room. Jack senses this and speaks directly to Akara.
Why would you need to be in a secure environment?
Because she asked me to be, he says curtly. Any other questions, Jack?
For Sully, yeah,
Jack says, trying to ignore the incensed bodyguards. Sully hesitates to eat another bite of food.
You okay, kids?
Jack and Akara stare each other down. And then Akara says flat out, Respect security and we'll respect production.
Sounds good, man.
Jack swigs his sports drink. Akara nods. I'm fucking impatient. Let's move on.
How about,
Jack says to Sully,
you tell us what you'd like to talk about on the show. You said there's bullshit that needs to be said. What bullshit?
Sully uses her muscular bicep to wipe her mouth.
So the photographs from the Olympics.
My muscles bind, but she's able to meet Jack's gaze while unloading more of her feelings.
The ones with the hair. The stupid fuckwads who keep thinking it's funny to zoom up on my bikini line need to know they are fuckwads.
Agreed. I finish off my tea in one gulp. Olympics should have been a time to celebrate Sully's athletic achievements. The entire fucking time, the media latched onto her shaving and waxing habits. Weeks before the summer games, they photographed Sully with stubble and hair by her bikini line. The image went viral. 85% of the questions reporters asked at the Olympics centered on her hair, and she answered all of them with a definitive fuck you. That also went viral.
Does the topic go deeper than the Olympics? Jack asks.
I tense.
What do you mean?
Sully scoops a piece of waffle. He means when you were younger, I explain. Did you deal with anything like that growing up? Her forest green eyes that match my hue just drown against me. Because I was there. I grew up with Sully. I saw her hit puberty earlier than most girls. Her hair is dark and grows fast. I saw the boys after swim meets jeer at the hair on her arms. I shoved two in a pool when they started making gorilla noises. And then I hugged Sully in the locker room, and we collectively said, fuck them. Fuck them.
Do I have to talk about that right now?
She whispers to me.
No.
I give Jack a serious look like, work your production magic and pivot this topic now.
Maybe you and Mafi can have a segment swimming or racing one another.
Thank you. I almost smile. You mean a segment where she kicks my ass? Sully's lips curve and she knocks her shoulder to mine.
I'll go easy on you.
No, you won't. I rotate to Jack. I'll only do it if you agree to get your ass beat by her too. Quinn coughs in his fist.
What did I say?
Pharaoh cracks his neck, silently gesturing to Akara, who looks murderous. Not at me, at Jack. I suggested swimming, not fucking. Jack wouldn't overstep the production talent boundary. I would tear him limb from limb. He knows that. Sullivan swings her head to the exec.
You swim?
Her eyes light up. The list of people she can race on her free time is short.
4 years at Penn. He gives her a smile and then flips a page in his notes. Can I get personal with you for a second?
Sully uncaps a water.
Sure.
Would you want to discuss your virginity on the show?
The room cuts in a tense silence.
Sully has shared pretty much a bucket of nothing with the public concerning dating or sex. She's been private, and so everyone assumes she's a virgin. Their assumption is correct, for once.
Sully mulls it over.
No pressure, Jack says. Since a lot of people talk about sex on the show, I have to ask. He pauses. Have you watched any episodes of the series?
Not really.
Sully rests her hand on her square jaw.
It's kind of weird seeing your family on TV.
She's not the only one who chooses to skip it. Her best friend Beckett Cobalt hasn't seen a single episode. Sully leans into Janie.
Do you talk about sex?
Jane touches her chest.
Personally, I have to talk about sex. If another guy tries to chokehold me in bed, I will lose it.
That's never happening again, Akara says, side-eyeing me because he knows I'll actually kill the person. I'll commit murder. Pharaoh wasn't around Jane during that incident, one of the worst nights of my life, where I woke up to a lamp crashing. Jane's old bodyguard started knocking down her locked door, standing guard because she brought someone over. I charged in her bedroom before security inched inside, and I tore a guy twice her size off her body. I was all rage. My mind blared three notes. You're killing her, you're killing her. You're going to die. My bodyguard had to restrain me. Just to be clear, I'm not proud of that.
Can I ask you something?
Sully says to Jack.
What exactly would I say about sex? I've never had sex, the end. There's nothing more.
Jack closes his notepad.
Are you waiting to have sex until marriage or to fall in love?
I've been so focused on swimming, I just never made time for anything else, including sex or dating, and I'd do it all over again. I don't regret it.
Have you ever been attracted to someone? Have you ever thought about hooking up?
I swear they're acting like they're the only two in the room. They've blocked us out. Sully nods a couple times.
Definitely. Several guys on the team were really fucking hot. But I wouldn't let that get in my way. My mom always said she regretted not waiting for someone who made her feel comfortable and loved, like my dad. And I want that too.
He smiles. Okay. Have you been kissed?
She bites her lip.
No.
Wait. I didn't know that. I glance at Akara, and I just read his protective features really well, and I nod to myself.
He knew.
Jack smiles more warmly.
So truth. That'll be a thing. It'll cause a lot of press, but it's up to you whether you want to share. The good? I can see a lot of girls relating. The bad? A lot of guys will
be fuckwads?
Yeah.
More bluntly, Pharaoh interjects.
Perverted fuckwads.
Sully holds her bent leg to her chest.
It shouldn't be such a big fucking deal. So what? I haven't been kissed and I'm 19. Who cares?
So make it less of a big deal, Jack says.
Make it ordinary. Make it normal.
You have that power, and it's all up to you.
30. Maximoff Hale. Board meetings at 8 in the morning are like an average human's 10-minute sprint. Come prepared to my table. Then we'll be back in our individual offices by 8:10. 15 other people sit in leather chairs. At 22, I head the table. It's not just hard work that put me here. Clearly, nepotism plays a vital role. I don't ever forget that.
We have 3 grant applications that look promising,
Yara says. A longtime board member and also the COO of Cobalt Inc. Outside of our own projects, HMC Philanthropies funds local and regional nonprofit organizations. But with the amount of requests we receive every year, we need to be selective in where the money is allocated. Are those the ones you emailed me last night? I ask.
Yes.
Approve them all, I tell her. My eyes lift to the clock on the wall. 8:05. Pharaoh will pick me up at 8:10 on the dot. I'm scheduled to drop by the local animal shelter and talk about future fundraising events. Just as I start wrapping up the meeting, the damn door blows open.
Heads swing. People freeze, coffee cups to lips and pens raised midair. Silence invades the room like an airborne virus. What the fuck is he doing here? Charlie Cobalt stands in the doorway. All 6'3" of him looks like he just fucked someone. No shit. White collar popped on his button-down, half-tucked into black pants. His sandy brown hair sticks up in odd places, artfully messed. Sorry I'm late. He saunters inside with a commanding oxygen-vacuuming presence. Everyone is caging their breath, everyone but me. Charlie strolls past my chair and the long row of board members, reaching the opposite head of the table. They watch, staring, like he's a reptile in the terrarium, burrowing underneath the dirt, only exposing himself when he wants you to see him. My phone pings on the table. I read the message without clicking in the text. I just learned that Oscar is at the HMC office. Heads up, if Charlie's not there yet, he will be. Pharaoh. Just 1 minute too late, but I appreciate that Pharaoh tried to warn me. I look up. Charlie stands at the other end. I shake my head a few times. He carries poise like a unique possession only he owns. His tweets go viral in under seconds. His words are like cannonballs thrown into pools. You've seen him on We Are Calloway. You've watched him as long as you've watched me. Threads about Charlie being a miniature version of his father, genius IQ, egotistical, self-serving, and pretentious, swim around the internet like truths, but they're webbed from slanted perceptions. You think you know Charlie Keating Cobalt, but you have no fucking clue. I know him as my cousin who turned 20 in September just 2 months ago, who skipped 2 grades and landed in mine, who cheated off my science homework only because he could, not because he needed to. As the eldest sons of 2 larger-than-life men, we both know what it's like to be shadowed by someone else's past. But for as many similarities as we share, for as many things that should bond us together, we've chosen to let them push us apart. Fair warning, you fuck with him, it's going to make me want to defend him. So don't. All in one swift move, he tugs back the chair, sits down, and kicks his black leather shoes onto the oak table. His yellow-green eyes cement on me. What I miss? I temper my irritation and say easily, What are you doing here, Charlie?
What does it look like I'm doing?
He spreads out his arms.
I'm attending a board meeting.
You haven't been to a board meeting since you were put on this board, I remind him. I'm highly aware that 15 other people separate me from my cousin. 15 people observe this interaction with keen interest that hoists my guards tenfold.
There's a first for everything.
Charlie waves me on, then leans an elbow on his chair, propping his head up with a finger by his temple. He's pissed at me. But this is Tuesday and the sky is blue, so everything is as it should be. I speak to the other board members. We're done here, anyway. I'll see you all next week. Thanks for coming. They collect their things, sending wary glances at Charlie before filing out. When the room empties, Charlie's feet fall to the floor. He makes no move to cross the boardroom. The long empty table divides us. I cross my arms. How long did it take you to plan that entrance?
That's the problem with you, Charlie says. You think everything has to be coordinated and premeditated? When the honest truth is, I was driving by your office. I wanted to talk to you. I stopped by. No, I didn't wait for the board meeting to be over because who the fuck cares?
I care, I snap.
And that's the problem with you. You can't account for anyone's feelings but your own. Why should I?
He combats.
You dominate the role of overprotective brother and cousin. I have no fucks to give because you've taken all of them.
Are you really sitting there and blaming me for your own lack of empathy? I say, dumbfounded.
I'm making an observation, he says. And second, I do care. It's why I'm here. You just can't fathom a scenario where someone else cares more about this family than you.
He rolls forward to the edge of the table.
The world believes you have no ego, but you've done a bang-up job of choking it down. I'm not even sure you know it's in there.
He waves a finger towards my body, my stomach.
Slowly but surely engorging.
I blow out a breath, clench my teeth. A growl snatches my throat, one that I won't let out. Fighting with him leads nowhere good. Growing up, we were in plenty of fistfights, usually with his twin brother and Janie physically separating us. We're caustic together. No matter how much we try for a better relationship, we always drive down the same road.
Sometimes I think he just likes being on the opposite side of me. I uncross my arms. Just tell me why you're here. If this is about Jane, it's not.